The Press Pass on WKXL is presented by the Prescription Center, where the health of you and your family comes first. Check out either of their two locations, one at the Concord Hospital campus, the other 125 North Main Street. The Prescription Center will also deliver your prescriptions to you free of charge. That's the Prescription Center, where the health of you and your family comes first.
This is the Press Pass with Chris Ryan.
This is where you hear unique conversations with the best athletes, coaches, and general managers in sports.
I think you appreciate each and every one. Each and every one is special in their own way. And
I play with two guys that they were on top of their game on a nightly basis, and people get spoiled. You know, they saw Manny, they saw David, so they start taking people for granted.
Opportunity for me. I know I need to help my team now, so you know, the better I play, the better it'll be for us.
I think it's one of the most important things is focus and consistency.
New England Patriots have won five straight games. They win this Sunday. They're in the top spot in the American Football Conference. We'll talk about that. Bill Belichick in just a few moments. And Titans head coach Mike Vrabel as the Titans come to Foxborough to take on the Patriots this week. One of the great baseball players of all time, Pete Rose, a little bit later. He was at the Granite State Baseball Dinner hosted by the Fisher Cats to benefit Chad. And we'll take a look at the Celtics as well. This is the Press Pass. I am Chris Ryan. You look at the Patriots' success. Their defense has been tremendous. They lead the National Football League with 18 interceptions. The pass rush has been a big part of that. We'll get into that with J.C. Jackson in just a little bit. Also, the Patriots' rushing attack, prolific. Mike Vrabel said it's the best in the National Football League. I talked with Patriots head coach Bill Belichick about that.
Morning, Bill. How are you?
Good, Chris. How's it going?
Good. Kind of along those lines, wanted to ask about the rushing attack. And Mike Vrabel said it was, if not the best, one of the best in the league. What has gone on in your view to make the rushing attack so effective?
Mike's really tossing the bouquets, huh?
What he does.
Well, he should know a good rushing attack because they've led the league in rushing down there pretty much since he's been there. So, you know, again, the running game's great if it's effective. Everybody likes to call running plays, but if you're gaining a yard or 2 yards, I mean, how many of them can you call? I mean, you just can't, you know, be second and 10, second and 9, third and 8 all day. So the running game's great if it's, you know, if you're making yards, and if you're not making yards, then, you know, it's hard to keep calling them. So I think that's really a factor of, you know, production, and certainly having balance in the your attack makes it more difficult for the defense to, you know, just stop one thing. I mean, you don't want to be a one-dimensional team unless you're just so good at it that even though you're one-dimensional, it's unstoppable. So, and that's hard to do in this league. So, you know, as long as we can run the ball productively, then I'm sure we'll keep calling them at whatever point that doesn't happen. Like in the Tampa game, I mean, you just can't keep calling runs and be third and 8 every time. That's just, you know, it's just hard to play offense that way. So backs want to run the ball, line wants to run the ball. If we do it well, then we'll keep running it. If we don't, then we're going to have to do something else.
There's always a lot of talk about, you know, trying to have an identity and what and kind of playing to that identity. Do you believe in that, like wanting to have that thing that you're known for? Or do you want to be able to adapt to whatever the circumstances are and kind of having that be your identity, kind of chameleon-like, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like for our identity to be winning. So what we need to do, you know, we went up to Minnesota against the number one defense in the league and got empty and threw the ball all day. We played against Pittsburgh in the opener in whatever year that was, 02, and then line up and empty and threw the ball all day. So, you know, sometimes you've got to do things that you feel like you need to do to win, and hopefully you have the team and the ability and enough, you know, breadth in your offense or defense or special teams to be able to do what you need to do in order to handle, you know, what your opponents do well or what you have to do to stop them. So I think that's really the part of it that it's hard to just go out there and run the same play, you know, all day in this league and be successful. It's just, I mean, there's just too many other good players and too many other good coaches. There's a way to stop everything. It's when you have to kind of handle everything. Those are really the bigger problems. So hopefully we can, you know, keep working to the point where we can do that, that if the defense takes something away, then we can do something else. And defensively, that we're able to stop whatever it is that they have, you know, whether it's mobile quarterback or a good tight end or a good receiver or a good running game, good downfield passing game or a good screen game or whatever it is, hopefully we have, you know, we can match up and we have enough scheme to be able to handle whatever it is we need to handle.
So, of course, the coaching matchup will be front and center as Mike Vrabel, head coach of the Tennessee Titans, battles Bill Belichick once again. I talked with Vrabel about that.
Mike, what are the one or two biggest ways you'd say that Bill has influenced your coaching style?
I think just the importance, you know, I mean, there's a lot of things, obviously. Importance on fundamentals, you know, so well-coached football team, watch them defensively. Just doing all the things that we think are important. You know, guys playing with their hands inside, you know, matching the quarterback's throwing hand, you know, DBs playing square, stabbing through the pocket, not swatting at the football, you know, staying on your feet when you tackle. Offensively, just, you know, their ability to play with technique up front, the things that they're teaching those guys, I'd say fundamentals is a large part. You know, trying to be prepared and trying to hold everybody accountable to what our job is, you know, focusing on what we have to do and trying to hold everybody accountable.
Mike, was there any surprise in how quickly Bill was able to turn this around and make it into, you know, an elite level team?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I only really try to focus on the next opponent. So that's my focus this week is the Patriots. I'm not really sure what they've done outside of when we don't play them.
Let's look at this Patriots defense now with J.C. Jackson, free agent at the end of the year, and high level, obviously, cornerback of the National Football League.
Hey, J.C., how are you?
Good. How you doing, Chris?
Awesome. Patriots lead the NFL with 18 interceptions this year. And I'm interested in, you know, how you see the relationship between what the pass rush is doing with what you guys are doing on the back end and picking balls off. Obviously, you know, linebackers getting in on that as well. But what do you see that relationship being? How has the pass rush this year helped you in particular?
I want to give credit to all the guys up front, Judon, Cal Van Noy, DG, LG, Baltimore, all those guys up front, man. I mean, you couldn't have no turnovers or have interceptions without no good pass rush. So pass rush married with good coverage is always a win for defense. You can always make plays. And that's how our defense been playing good, because our pass rush has been pretty good. And not only that, but we cover it, like, it married all up together. That's how I look at it. You got a good pass rush. You playing good coverage. You're gonna make some plays.
Tannehill's got 12 picks this year, which is uncharacteristic for him. What have you seen on film in regard to that? And, you know, when you know a quarterback is kind of prone to throwing interceptions, does that kind of amp you up a little bit?
Say it again.
Does that kind of, being the ball hawk that you are, when you see a quarterback that's kind of prone interceptions, do you get a little more amped up for that?
Yeah, of course, man. I mean, not really. I mean, no matter who the quarterback is, I don't amp me up. Knowing what I'm about to do, that's what amp me up the most. Like, okay, I know what I'm about to do coming into this game. Tannehill, he can't amp me up because he threw five picks last week. That have nothing to do with me. That don't help me up at all.
And finally, Bill is usually really good at taking away the top weapon of the opposing team. Why do you think that that is. And, you know, when you look at, you know, AJ Brown in particular this week, what's the key to taking him away this week in your view?
The key of taking him away, just knowing and being aware of what he had on the field. And just knowing what he liked to do. Like, we know he's the go-to guy, and we got a good game plan coming into this game. That's something I don't want to talk about right now, but we got a good game plan for AJ Brown.
Six of those 18 interceptions belong to J.C. Jackson. This coming off of last year, in which he was second in the NFL with 9 picks. Let's look at the Boston Celtics right now, who are on the outside looking in at the NBA playoff picture. They lost 123-104 at the Garden to the Nets, and the Celtics had been playing better. And this was, again, one of those kind of benchmark games. They have not played well against the Nets over the last couple of years and once again get blown out on their home floor by the Brooklyn Nets. I talked with Jaylen Brown about that.
How far do you feel like you guys are behind, you know, Brooklyn at this point, given, you know, what took place last year? Do you feel, you know, tonight was just kind of out of the realm and you guys are right there with them?
Say that one more time.
Do you feel you're behind the Nets at this point?
What do you mean by that?
Are they a better team than you guys? Or do you feel that you're right there with them?
They outplayed us tonight. We're looking forward to the next matchup. We obviously are a good team, and we look forward to playing against anybody, and we don't put any team before ourselves. So I don't know how to answer that question, but they beat us tonight. But we're looking forward to the next matchups in the future. But we believe in ourselves every time we step on the court. That's all I got to say to that.
Ime Udoka is a really good communicator, and he comes from Greg Popovich's system in San Antonio, which is where the Celtics were last night. And Coach Pop is huge at investing in people and investing in who they are, their families. And then that also allows for him to have a little more of an open and honest discussion with them on the basketball side of things as well. I talked a little with Ime about that as he was in San Antonio, got to see Coach Pop once again.
Hey, Ime, a little bit more on Coach Pop for a second. And, you know, you talked about how he develops relationships and invests in people. How does that allow you to be able to kind of talk to people honestly about what's going on the court as well? And does it take time to develop those types of relationships where you invest in the person and then you can be even more honest about who they are, what you want them to do?
Yeah, I would say that the honesty part doesn't take time. It's what I think players want to hear from the get-go. You know, you can obviously coach them a little harder or differently based on the time spent in the relationship formed, but the honesty is upfront from day one. I think, you know, I enjoyed that as a player. Coaches that were upfront and honest with you, although it may be hard to hear at times, I think that's definitely a way you have to approach guys. You know, they got a BS, BS monitor, antennas go up on BS. And so, I think players see through that pretty quickly. And so being upfront and honest is the way I am and the way I think players appreciate coaches being. So you can obviously, like I said, go harder at them once you form that bond and relationships. But from day one, the honesty got to be there.
Let's go to baseball now, where I talked with Red Sox Chief Baseball Officer Chaim Bloom as the team picked up the option of Alex Cora's contract for the 2023 and 2024 seasons. They also saw Eduardo Rodriguez, one of their main starting pitchers, sign and be introduced by the Detroit Tigers. So I talked with Chaim Bloom about both of those topics. Red Sox look to be very active in free agency.
Chaim, on back to Alex for a second. Could you just describe the skill set that he has in regard to being able to utilize data, but also having, you know, the players element, the feel for the game, and being able to kind of manage those two different dynamics and blend them?
Yeah, I think increasingly that is almost a prerequisite to do this job successfully at this level. And, you know, different managers and different really good managers do it in different ways, but they all do in their own way, you know, what you described. They are very prepared. They understand information and how to use it and what types of questions to answer with it. And they're very in tune with their clubhouses. They're in tune with what's going on in the dugout. They're in tune with what's going on in the game. And they're able to combine all that information to make decisions. Now, I don't think that's any different in some sense from what managers have been doing for as long as baseball has been played, using everything at their disposal to make decisions. It's just now there is so much more information that you have at your disposal before the game, and it becomes even more important to understand how to use it and how to weigh it along with, you know, the input that you're getting as the game is going on.
And you mentioned earlier a desire to add a starting pitcher. Is there a sense that you want to have somebody that has kind of the same inequity in regard to production of what Eddie would give you, that consistency, and that's what you're looking for? Or are you comfortable with guys within the organization to be able to provide that?
Well, we do think we have some guys here that can provide that. Obviously, Eddie set a pretty high bar, very, very accomplished, especially the last couple full seasons that he had here. You know, that's a tough bar to reach. We do think we have guys that are capable of it, but we also want to supplement that with additions from outside the organization as well.
Grand State Baseball Dinner was held this past Saturday downtown in Manchester, and it brought Pete Rose, the all-time hit king, one of the great baseball players ever. Of course, Pete not in the National Baseball Hall of Fame as a result of him having gambled on games, being caught doing so, and then banned from baseball by the commissioner, and has not been reinstated as of yet. But there's one thing that is without question, and that is the type of player that Pete Rose was. And I talked with Pete about that, his approach to the game, what he thinks of the game today.
Pete, there was a tremendous conviction that you played the game with. Where did that come from, and was it easy to manifest that type of desire to play on a day-in, day-out basis?
Well, I have to blame my dad for that, because my dad was an athlete. And he was very punctual, very aggressive, and he just taught me the way to play when I grew up. I played the same way when I was 9 years old as I was when I was 39 years old playing for the Reds. Play hard, play to win, play every day.
And was it easy to do that during the course of big league career? Because guys will talk about, you know, getting burnt out. They'll talk about the fact that it's difficult to be in.
I never got burnt out. Took care of myself. Never smoked, never drank. Never worried about getting burnt. Everybody gets tired. You play 162 games in 5.5 months, you get tired. But that's not an excuse. Get your sleep and take care of yourself. I played 3,500 games. 3,558, actually. I batted 15,000 times. I don't remember being tired.
There's certain records that people think will not be broken in baseball. Your 4,256 is one of those stolen bases. Do you think anyone will ever get more hits than you?
No, because they don't play that way today. Nobody even got 200 hits this past year. A couple guys got 190. That used to be my goal every year, to get 200 hits. Hit 300, score 100 runs. Because if I did those three things, it gives my team a better chance to win. And the only reason you're playing is to win. That's what you got to get across to youngsters today. You play to win. It's more fun to win. Everybody's in a better mood when you win. You have kids? Okay. Is he a player?
He is.
Are you in a better mood when he wins?
Everybody's in a better mood when he wins.
That's what I just said. Work hard, buddy. You never know. You might be playing down the street in Fenway Park. You'd be a home run hitter there.
Pete, when you watch the game today, is there a frustration in how the game is played? And do you find yourself, you know, talking to the TV a lot in that?
I don't worry about that, because it's the way it's played. I'm tired of strikeouts. I'm tired of pop flies. I'm tired of all the new rule changes. Start the extra inning, a man on second. You can't break up a double play. You can't run into a catcher. You can't pitch inside. I mean, I'll ask you, name me a rule that they've changed in the last 5-6 years that makes your son and me better fans. There isn't any.
I think maybe the one rule that's changed is having the relievers face three batters. Is that something that, you know, having the specialist?
It takes all the strategy out of the game. You know, why you want to bring a reliever in if he can only face three batters and there's an inning and two-thirds to go? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. And by the way, all the guys changing the rules never played in their life. They're just changing rules. They're not helping the game. The game's becoming boring on TV. They should address one thing that they never talk about: speeding up the damn game. Games are too long. Why? Because there's so many pitching changes. When you have eight or ten pitching changes in a game, it takes time to warm all those pitchers up. They don't understand this.
Pete, thank you so much.
Okay.
Pete Rose right there. Let's get back to the Patriots and their huge contest against the Titans at 1 p.m. in Foxborough. Patriots, of course, at 7-4. Titans at 8-3. Patriots win, and they are the top team in the AFC. I talked with Troy Brown. Of course, Troy, a huge part of three championship teams with the Patriots, now Patriots wide receiver coach, about Jacoby Myers, who has stood out to me not just as a pass receiver, but as a great football player. And that includes being a blocker. I talked with Troy Brown about Jacoby Myers.
Hey, Troy, how are you?
I'm doing great, man. How are you?
Good. Want to ask you about Jacoby kind of in the framework of being a great slot receiver yourself. And you know, I was talking to him about it, and you look at the legacy of Patriots slot receivers and Edelman, Welker, you, there's a size, size comparison between those three individuals. And obviously Jacoby's a little bit bigger. What goes into being a great slot receiver, and is there a benefit to being bigger, smaller in that spot?
You know, I won't say there's a benefit to being either or. I think just having some savvy in there and, you know, being able to adjust to things on the fly and those kinds of things. I think Jacoby has developed that. I think you look at Wes, you look at Julian, and it took them some time to get to the level they were, that they played at in the slot. You know, it took them a while to get all the savviness they had in there and the ability to go in there and make good decisions. And Jacoby's still building that as well too. So, but he's actually developed it pretty quickly as a slot wide receiver. And obviously, yeah, he's a bigger target in there. So it makes it a little bit easier for a quarterback to find him in some of those situations. So, you know, and he's able to go up and get the ball at higher points than probably what we were. But, you know, and he's a good athlete. I mean, Jacoby was a college quarterback. You know, he was a baseball player. Coming out of high school as well, too. So I probably could have did that as well in college. So he's a good athlete. He adapts to things pretty well because of his athleticism. And, you know, he's a smart kid. And he's obviously worked his butt off to get to where he is. So and he's a hardworking person. So I think all those things have helped him develop into a pretty good player for us.
You mentioned toughness being a big factor and you're taking the hit. But is part of the savviness also kind of finding that balance between taking the hit and also – you know, avoiding the hit and picking your spots so you don't take a beating?
Well, I think over time you learn how to get hit as well, too, and how to absorb some of those hits. You've seen Kobe be able to go over the middle and catch the ball in traffic and, you know, take a hit while trying to pick up a first down as well, too, and holding onto the ball. So those are all key things that go into playing that position. And like I said, he's just done a fantastic job and worked his butt off to get to where he is. He's gotten stronger. He's worked his butt off in the weight room to be able to absorb some of those hits. And, you know, you just got to have a feel for where some of the things are happening on the field and knowing where the shots are coming from at times. So and he's done a good job. He's got good awareness of, you know, what's around him and what's going on, you know, with the coverages.
Thanks, Troy.
Yep.
And chatting with another great Patriot as well in Jerod Mayo, Patriots inside linebackers coach, about how Bill Belichick always gets this team peaking at the right time, and also the role that the linebackers have played, not just in getting to the quarterback, getting into the backfield, but also dropping into pass coverage. We saw a big interception from Kyle Van Noy last week. Here is Jerod Mayo.
Hey, Jerod, how are you?
Good. How are you, Chris?
Good. You know, it's often been said that Bill Belichick teams peak at the right time, and this is kind of the time of year for the Patriots. Why do you think the team does that, and you know, how do you build to this moment?
No, honestly, I'm not sure why that happens. I would say, you know, with the shorter training camps and not as many two-a-days, just in general, teams start to use the first few weeks to try to get to know one another, right, and see where they fit in the scheme. I would say, you know, these guys are coming together nicely right now. Obviously, you're only as good as your last performance, so we got to play good this week.
I want to ask you about Matt and as well as Juwan in terms of their pass coverage and how they can drop back or rush. Bill was talking about that this morning. How important is that for a linebacking core to have that ability to be good in pass coverage as well as rushing? And how do you see that in regard to the strength of the defense?
Yeah, it's been that way for a long time, you know, just having backers that can both rush and cover. It obviously gives the offensive line, the offensive lines around the league trouble. You know, anytime you have a good pass rusher that's dropping, now you kind of get a 2-for-1, right? So you buy the tackle and can also now cover a back. So anytime you can get those 2-for-1 opportunities in this game, it's always a bonus. And we have the benefit of having a bunch of guys that can rush and cover.
This is the Press Pass. I am Chris Ryan. So the Patriots were off on Sunday, which gave Bill Belichick a chance to sit back and watch. No, Bill was not watching NFL games like all of us, which I found out when I had a suspicion. But I found out even more once I chatted with him earlier this week. Bill Belichick.
Morning, Bill. How are you?
Good, Chris.
Wanted to ask kind of a general question on, you know, the league at this point after getting kind of a Sunday to watch some games, etc. Obviously, the league generally has equity and parity. Do you think that there's more of that this year and less defined favorites, perhaps, than there have been in previous years?
Yeah, I don't know, Chris. That's really probably a better question for somebody else. I try to focus on the teams that we play. And obviously, last week, spent a ton of time on Atlanta. And the week before that, spent a ton of time on Cleveland. You know, what everybody else is doing, you see bits and pieces of it, and you see some of the crossover games and, you know, some situational things that come up. You know, I monitor those pretty regularly, weekly, but just sitting back and watching games, that's not really my thing right now.
And on Tennessee for a second, just your initial impressions of them and your thoughts on, you know, the game yesterday, obviously against the Texans.
Yeah, well, they turned the ball over against the Texans, which is hard to count on. That's not what they do, so I don't think we'll get that. You know, a tough physical team. Their backs run hard. You know, they have a very experienced line. You know, obviously Brown's a, you know, huge threat. Firkser had some big plays against us, and we played them in 19. You know, defensively, they're, again, a strong physical team up front. I mean, you got to handle the big guys, got to handle Simmons and then, you know, Landry and the pass rush. They make, you know, it's typical, I would say, Mike team. You know, they're tough, they're physical, they make you beat them, they don't make many mistakes. They know what they're doing, they're sound, they're a good fundamental team, they tackle well. The backs and receivers run hard with the ball. Quarterback's athletic. So, sound in the kicking game. You know, we're going to have to play a good football game in all three phases.
Back right there. Also talked with Damian Harris, Patriots running back.
Hey, Damian, how are you?
Fantastic, how are you?
Awesome. Mike Vrabel described your rushing attack as being the best in the National Football League. What, in your view, goes into, you know, kind of the diversity of this attack, and why do you think it is so effective?
Well, I mean, it starts with what I just said. I mean, you got the five guys up front. That's the anchor of our team. It's the anchor of our offense. They set the tone. They set the standard, the mindset for what type of game it's going to be. Obviously, the guy, the tight ends, the receivers that block out on the edge, you know, they do a great job week in and week out, playing and play out. And then, you know, we got a lot of good backs that can run the ball well and they can do a lot of things well with the ball in our hands. So it's a collective effort. You know, we got great coaches that put together a great scheme. They coach us up every single day on how to do our jobs the best that we can. You know, we take the coaching, we go out there and put it on the field. And like I said, once you got the guys up front, moving people 5 and 6 yards off the ball. You know, we got receivers going in to dig out safeties, blocking the corners, blocking the force. And you got running backs that can do things well with the ball in their hands. I think that provides a good rushing attack for us and, you know, ultimately helps our team.
You guys have so many different types of rushers, and obviously Bill's had that for many, many years. From a mental standpoint, what do you have to do in order to make sure that, you know, you're not, you put yourself in a place where you look at it as a strength as opposed to, this guy's getting more carries than I am, et cetera, or maybe I have a skill set that's not being utilized as much as maybe it should be. Like, how do you put yourself in a place where it's, you know, it is team first and everything else kind of gets pushed aside?
it's simple, man. You know, we got all these guys with one goal in mind, and that's to win. We don't care who has what carries, who gets the ball thrown to them more. I mean, these are – that's ridiculous thoughts, and that's not something that goes on in this locker room. I say it all the time. I allude to it all the time. I mean, you guys can see the way that we play. You guys can see that we play for one another, and we go out there and we have a good time playing well together. I mean, it's not about one guy who touches the ball the most, you know, who gets the glory, who gets the praise. Man, we're a bunch of guys that just want to come in here and grind week in and week out, go out there, play our best football on Sunday, and go out there and win as a team. Nothing else matters. It's not about stats, accolades, you know, personal gain, none of that. I mean, you guys see it. It's very evident. We're playing for each other, and we're playing for one common goal. And we're sticking to that. That's how we've always been. That's how we're going to be. And, you know, if we keep doing what we're doing, keep progressing every single week, keep playing our best football on Sundays together collectively as a team, you know, we're going to keep moving in the right direction.
The Celtics now, and Ime Udoka, as we talked about before, is a tremendous communicator. And I feel that, you know, some of the bad habits of the Celtics in the past, such as being a very isolation-oriented offense, playing more in a Spurs concept on both sides of the basketball, that stuff is still to come, and this is a work in progress. So, you know, we look at the Celtics' record outside of the playoffs, you know, 25% of the way through the season. Not great, but I do urge folks to be a bit patient with this group. I talked with Grant Williams about Ime as a communicator. Grant, I hope ball is well with you. Just how would you describe Ime's coaching style as a whole? And he's talked a lot about, you know, communication and the keys there. How would you describe what his coaching style is like and kind of the level of engagement between him and players?
Yeah, he's a player's coach. He's the guy that is there for you, but he also gets on you. And that's something that I love, just because it's that intensity. You see his competitive nature come out. When a guy that necessarily shouldn't be scoring scores, he's upset. When a guy that gets a tough offensive rebound, he's upset. So he's all about physicality. He's all about competitiveness, and he's all about that grit. And that's something that I feel like Celtics basketball is and has always been. So he embodies that, and he's been a great mentor to a lot of young guys on this team.
This team has a chance to be a really good defensive team when it focuses and is engaged. It wasn't in the Brooklyn game. It has been in other games this year, and we've seen the potential that exists. And potential is obviously always a dangerous word. I talked with Rob Williams about that.
Hey, Rob, hope all is well with you. Just what's impressed you most in watching the team in your absence? And also, Ime Udoka, what have been your impressions of him early on as you guys have you know, been able to climb out of a difficult start?
Yeah, I've just been impressed with how the team has been able to end games. You know, we haven't been ending games that well, you know, letting people come back from big deficits, but just been proud of them, how they've been ending games. And as far as coach, you know, he got all his trust in us, and we got all our trust in him. You know, feel like we locked in mentally. We there. We have great conversations with each other. You know, it's rare that someone can really engage in the conversation with their coaches, you know. So feel like we're taking big steps forward.
It's the Press Pass. I'm Chris Ryan. Three, two, and one. Welcome back here on the Press Pass. I am Chris Ryan. Tonight's show presented by Douglas Leonard and Garvey. And we've had the honor of talking with some of the great players of all time during this time period in which sports has stopped. And we've really enjoyed looking back, particularly at the Celtics teams of the early part of the championship dynasty with Sam Jones. And we're going to be joined on the program right now by the Houdini of the Hardwood, one of the greatest basketball players of all time. He won the NBA championship six times with the Celtics, most valuable player in 1957, and he was an all-star from 1951 to 1963, and to a large degree invented the way the point guard position was played, and he joins us right now on the program. The Houdini of the Hardwood, Bob Cousy. Mr. Cousy, how are you?
I was better before you called me the Houdini of the Hardwood. despite being 91, I guess we're going to make it through this broadcast, hopefully.
And yeah, I was always a show off. So the Houdini business, I guess I was fortunate in being able to do things in the 50s and 60s that were ahead of my time. But nowadays, every 12-year-old, in every schoolyard of the world, is doing it with probably much more panache than I was in those days. But I was the only one doing it, so I was getting all the attention.
Yeah, so kind of take us through how you created that mantra, if you will. I mean, you didn't create it; it was given to you. But your style of play was so different than those around you, and most of it was basically for effectiveness as much or more so than show, correct?
Oh, absolutely. My personality as a person, a player, a coach has always been very conservative. In those days, believe it or not, most coaches wouldn't allow you to take a hook shot. That was revolutionary. So throwing the ball behind your back or some of the stuff I was doing was unheard of. I was lucky for a number of reasons. One, I was given the God-given skills to be able to do that. Secondly, I played for a couple of coaches in college, Buster Shirley and Ed Arnold in the pros, who allowed me to do it and who were revolutionary themselves in terms of liking the up-tempo game. Now, most coaches in those days will walk the ball up the floor, coach, you know, call a play and execute it, and blah, blah, blah. There was very little freelance, and structure to everything. So if I'd played for one of those guys, you and I wouldn't be talking now, Chris, because you would have never heard of me. My skills were definitely focused on the up-tempo game. And but with that said, any time I had the opportunity to execute something in an orthodox manner, as opposed to, you know, unorthodox or the Houdini business, I would do it the orthodox way. But when the occasion arose for this, in other words, it was, what's the cliche about the mother of invention? You do what is required to successfully execute the play. And fortunately, as I say, I had the God-given skills to have options to that, if necessary. But 90% of my game was pretty conservative. So I got a bum rap. I was glad I did because it sold tickets, and obviously it helped my career, I guess. But it was, as the media is tempted to do from time to time, they kind of overreacted to it, you know.
So did you truly, you know, invent, you know, a lot of these particular play? I mean, the behind-the-back pass, the look away, the stutter dribble. Did you see anybody else do it before that?
No. It was the first time, when was it? About my sophomore year or junior year in college, we were playing. We had pretty successful teams in college. We'd sell out the Boston Garden pretty regularly. And
with the Holy Cross, of course.
Yeah, Loyola of Chicago or someone. Anyway, we're down to the last 10 seconds and with one down or something, and Buster Shirley called a timeout and said, basically, Coos, do your thing for 10 seconds, get a good shot. And I started down the floor. This big football player was guarding me, and then and now, you know, you play people to their weaknesses, and he had been overplaying me to my life. Everybody prefers either to go right or left, depending on, you know, whether they're righty or lefty. I'd been going to my right too often, and he's lined up half a man to my right, so I couldn't go that way. I instinctively, never had done it before, instinctively slapped it behind my back. it surprised the hell out of me, and it surprised him even more, because as I took my first big step with my left foot, it gave me a half a man advantage on him, and I floated in 10 seconds worth and took a left-hand hook, of all things, and it went in as the buzzer went off. And the media after the game was all over my cat. How long have you been practicing that? And the reality was, it was the first time I'd ever done it. So to me, it was pretty simple to execute, frankly, and it came naturally. Even though it looked so difficult and no one else was doing it, I don't know. Albeck claimed I was a freak, and in terms of my build, my long arms, my big hands, etc., which allowed me to do these things that at that point no one else was doing. But Chris watched the game today. I mean, you know, these guys do so many more spectacular things in midair, and half the time now they're 7 feet when they do it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not only the gods that are doing this, but the big people have made gigantic athletic strides.
One of the great things about this time period for me is allowed me to go back on YouTube and watch, you know, the Celtics of the 50s and 60s and watch some of those black and white games. And watching you, it's like watching a individual who has been taken back in time from the modern game and put into, you know, the 1950s and 60s, where you are playing the modern game back then. Well, as you referenced, everybody else is doing a much more conservative style of basketball. And then, you know, there you are playing with speed and tempo.
I would say I will give myself credit for having an unusual imagination for the game, and I'd like to think unique creativity. I'll take credit for that. I did see the game and the floor a little differently, and that's why when I have a couple of beef eaters and start boasting about the old days, I'll talk about that basketball, in my judgment, is an art form.
Yeah.
And if it is, if you agree with that, it resides pretty much in the position of point guard and in a transitional type of game where every time you're painting a panorama every time down the floor, because it changes every time, because you as the point guard, no matter what your imagination, you're never going to do the same thing because you don't know what you're going to do heading down. Your movements and your creativity is predicated on what the defenders do as you charge at them down the floor each time. So, as I say, you're painting this beautiful portrait each time. The audience doesn't know what's going to happen in front of their eyes. Hopefully you do this wonderful thing, magic for them, you and whoever else, you know, you're working with, and it creates a successful conclusion, and 18,000 people go wild. This is unique in sports to some degree, you know, and as I say, it's a constantly changing pattern. And a lot of it has to do with those two things, what the defenders pretty much tell you to do and your own creativity mixed in there that hopefully creates the masterpiece that you're looking to create. So, yeah, transition in basketball, as I say, is where the where it really becomes beautiful. 10 big athletic bodies moving down floor at a pretty fast pace these days. The athleticism that's required, the creativity, and then hopefully the successful conclusion is that's where it is for me in sports, at least.
One of the more underrated aspects, you know, in my view, of the Russell years, if you will, and the Celtics championship teams is, you know, the collective intellect of the players involved. And you were kind of alluding to it there in regards to, you know, your game and the ability to anticipate and to understand what was going on around you and allow for that knowledge to dictate the pace with which you play. But there are so many individuals on those teams who are incredibly bright individuals and bright basketball minds as well. Obviously, Bill Russell, first and foremost. You think about Tom Heinsohn, Sam Jones, Casey Jones, and I could go on for a while. But the collective intellect of that group, in addition to the competitiveness, which gets talked about a lot, I think that at times that's lost, is that you guys were all very smart in addition to being disciplined and driven.
Well,
Satch Sanders as well, a very, very bright man.
Exactly. Since I've already absorbed my two beef eaters, I'll continue in that vein. When I do have them, I also will boast to my friends that I think what we accomplished during that 13-year period, I was around, as you mentioned, for six of them, has never been done before in sports, hasn't gotten the proper attention. The Globe did a whole piece last, and I'm happy for the Bruins because Jeremy Jacobs is an old friend, and Bobby Orr and I go way back, so I'm happy they got all that attention for a week, but because they won that championship.
In 70, know. Yep, 50 years ago.
Celtics won 11 times, Chris, in 13 years. I mean, when a team in any of the major sports wins the world championship today, they burn down the city for a couple of days, you know. They go, they have parades, they go off. When they win it once, we won it 11 times in 13 years. That will never, that's never been done before in professional team sports.
Including,
it'll never be done again.
Including, as Sam mentioned,
that is the great Bob Cousy. This is the Press Pass. I'm Chris Ryan.